Today is Wednesday. It's June 26, 2024, and it's 2:40 in the afternoon. And hi, this is John Williams. Thanks for finding the Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll broadcast portions of this Saturday night at 8, and you can listen to me weekdays on WGN Radio from 10 to 2.
I'm Marge Helper, and I draw on decades of experience as a journalist, a communications consultant, working in government reform, to be a pundit doing my best to challenge authority.
I'm Kate Plies, former Chicago reporter, columnist, now doing the Chicago history website, Roseland Chicago 1972.
I'm Eric Zorn, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, where last week there was a big profile of Marge Halperin. That if anyone wants to know even more about Marge, there's a nice essay there that she wrote. And that completes the Meet the Rascals group. I have everyone who's on the panel now has a little profile. You can learn more about them.
Everyone except you, Eric, I'd like to point out. I have offered to interview you several times, you did sort of give me a wishy-washy answer last time. But it's not so easy to be interviewed about yourself, is it?
No, it isn't. Like Brandon Johnson, I have no comments.
No.
Eric. Wow. Marge, you should press him on this and make him uncomfortable.
I'd like to make him comfortable doing it.
In 2017, you said this. How does that square with what you said today?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
That's the other side of the ledger. By the way, Marge, since the debate is tomorrow night between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, has Canada TV called you for some commentary about that?
Not yet. We said we would do some day of coordination, so I would expect something. They watch our politics as closely as we do, pretty much.
Did you guys see, by the way, they say as many as 60% of Americans are going to watch the debate. It's going to be broadcast on the radio, too, on our station. But I think that number sounds crazy high. I don't think 60% of the people are going to watch the debate. I know 60% aren't going to like the debate. Are you? I presume we're all going to watch it. It feels like a chore to me. I'm not looking forward to it at all. It's a doctor's visit I got to take, and I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it. Is that how you guys feel about it?
I feel like I'm having to go to a really, really scary movie where my hands will be tied down so I can't cover my eyes, and it's just going to be petrifying.
Yeah.
I do know people who are going to tape it and watch it later because they don't think they can stand the stress. But I don't have that view. I'm always interested to see how these things play out. And I have confidence in my candidate, Joe Biden, because I think he's strong on issues. That's what he knows how to do. He knows his stuff. So I'm not so worried about that.
He has trouble conveying it, I think.
Sometimes, but not in the State of the Union address, for which he similarly prepared.
And read from a prompter. I mean,
yeah, that's, he had a teleprompter that whole time. And he delivered it, I thought, in a pretty kind of unnatural yelling cadence for the whole thing.
I thought he was energized. I thought it was the best performance of his presidential career. Eric, is there going to be popcorn at your house tomorrow night?
I'm going to be watching alone. Johanna's going to the Sky game. She's like checking out. She said, fill me in later. You know, of course I'm going to be watching. I think it's going to be fascinating. And I'll be on the edge of my seat as well. I wonder, clearly Trump is going to Trump. There's no question about that. I'm sure his handlers are telling him that he's got to be restrained and calm and factual, but that's not his brand. And I don't see him able to do that even in this studio setting that he's in. The question everyone's on everyone's mind is Joe Biden up for this 90 minutes of give and take with Trump? And how's he going to answer some of the tougher things that Trump is inevitably going to lob at him, which have to do, I think, mostly with crime and immigration? Perhaps he'll try some stuff with the economy. I don't know. That's going to. I mean, he may go after Hunter Biden. But Trump, I know that Biden has been reportedly preparing really hard for this debate, that he is sequestered with his advisors and handlers, and they've been doing mock debates and so on. And Trump famously never prepares, that he has this incredible confidence in himself and his ability to wing it. And I think it really cost him back in 2020 that he tried to do that, and he was really bad. And I'm anticipating that he's going to be bad. The question is Biden going to make a passing grade with people who are concerned about his age and acuity?
I've got
I've seen suggestions that he should come out and own whatever it is that people are thinking about him up front. And I really love that idea. You know, let him say, you know, I may not be the youngest man on this stage by a couple of years, but I am the one you can count on to protect our country internationally and not to refuse to join NATO or other coalitions that make our country safe. I'm the one who's going to protect women and their rights to their own healthcare decisions. I'm going to protect your ability to have a family through IVF or not have one through birth control. I'm the one who's going to help immigrants seek asylum in an orderly way while protecting our, you know, he can go through with those issues. And maybe I have to have a drink of water now and then, or maybe I want to sit down on a stool, but I'm the one you can count on to stand up for you. Trump is going to only stand up for himself.
That didn't go real well for him, though, in his little speech after the Robert K. Hur prosecutor's report. Myself, I'm just not sure if it's a good idea for him to bring it up himself. I also am not worried that he can't talk about his issues. I completely agree with you there, Marge. It's not like I agree with every single thing he's ever done, but obviously, hands down, he's got it over Donald Trump. And can, I'm sure, make a good case for himself. I mean, for instance, last week, I really felt it was wrong for his spokesperson to actually be implying and basically saying that the couple of videos that were floating around last week that he looked especially, you know, bad in were either cheap fakes or deep fakes. And I really felt like that was kind of crossing the line to the Biden side, now kind of throwing misinformation out there because they were not.
You mean where he was wandering off or looked a little inattentive with the G7?
The G7 and also on stage with Barack Obama, both of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, argue all you want that neither of those were a problem, but I think it was very wrong for them to imply that the videos were either a cheap fake or a deep fake.
Right.
Anyway, and of course, that's the type of thing that someone like me is worried about happening over 90 minutes.
I was going to say, they were deceptively edited those videos.
I mean, it didn't make much difference to me.
What do you mean it didn't make much difference to you? Did it represent what was actually happening in the moment? Did he wander off?
Yes, I think it did.
My view of it was that he was maybe distracted as he leaned. I'm not talking about the Barack Obama one, but where he was kind of wandering off to talk to somebody else, and then he was sort of marshaled back over to stand in this line. But if you cut it off right there, it looked like he just kind of went off into Nowheresville. But in fact, there was somebody else on the other side of the view that we didn't see. So,
of course, you can obviously edit any video to make it look worse than it was. The G7 one where he wandered over towards a paratrooper who was on the ground doing something with his parachute was marginally not as bad when you saw the full thing. He still did not look to me like he was speaking to the paratrooper. He still really looked out of it.
But then what is the implication? So what about
the Obama
all of
them? That one did not look any better whatsoever.
Okay, but I still wonder then what's the implication? What would you even suggest then?
The implication is that he is old enough that sometimes he's kind of blanking out. That's what it looks like.
I think that's
not as bad as the Mitch McConnell freeze thing.
There you go.
Please.
That's what we're talking about.
That's what I'm saying.
This is not that.
He wasn't quite at that level, but it was not.
It's not even the same thing.
The way Barack Obama had to put his arm around him to guide him off stage was not good.
Why are we so fixated on this? First of all, those were manipulated videos, and I think
manipulated.
Okay, well, just finish your thought, Marge. Go ahead.
And secondly, I think, why are we so vulnerable? Because, like, we're Democrats and we want to exhaust everything and be fair about our candidate. When their candidate can't put two sentences together, have you seen his rambling about water and how hard it is for him to have luxurious lather on his
hair? Or Hannibal Lecter.
And Hannibal Lecter, his fixation with sharks. I mean, he is off the deep end.
Of course he is.
He has no grip. He has very little grip on reality. They are both old. They are, and I've said this before, you might not agree, but I think they're virtually the same age.
He's a little bit older, but obviously Trump Trump's ramblings are absolutely insane. Of course they are. The reason it's an issue is because Biden has consistently been behind the whole polls with Trump this whole time. And right now, it's not looking really good
for him.
Okay,
it doesn't help. I'll grant you that. It doesn't help. Eric, what are you thinking when you listen to this conversation?
Biden needs to erase those doubts by appearing strong. And I think he did get a bump from the State of the Union in that regard. He was strong for, was it 90 minutes then? It's a very different environment in a debate where you're being attacked verbally and where you've got to think on your feet. And I think if he passes that test, that a lot of this age stuff will go away. It will start to go away. Now, the Republicans aren't going to let it go. But I think that there's going to be, if he's able to overcome that, that's good. What I don't want to hear him do, though, is try to tell Americans that their feelings about the economy are wrong, that their feelings about crime are wrong. You can tell people that crime is down and that inflation is down and that certain prices are down, but they know how they feel. And I think you need to really contrast. You have to look to the future, not the past. In fact, not even to the present. And he has to make the case that what the next 4 years are going to look like under a President Joe Biden, and how the 4 years look like under Donald Trump, and who's going to get taxed. Who's going to pay higher tax rates? Who's going to pay more in prices? Who's going to address environmental concerns and so on? I think he needs to throw this conversation to the future, and he needs to appear strong. I don't think he can scold people and say, yeah, you think the economy's bad, but it's not. It's good. It's true that it is good. It is better. But I think you need to tell people not what's going on now, but what is going to go on in the next four years. And I do think that what Donald Trump is promising for the next 4 years is horrific. And you look at that, at the 2025 agenda that they've put out, and what they want to do. That is really, really frightening stuff. And I think you need to, focus on 2025 as well as Trump does.
Well, to that end, Eric, let me ask you this. Would you then advise Joe Biden to make the case that we have an existential moment here? If he would say something along the lines of, look, I know some of you don't like me or my policies, but we're still America. We're still a democracy. Don't do it. You know, don't turn the reins over to this guy who's pretty much said, figuratively and literally, he wants to be a dictator, and some of his policies would be very strongman. I mean, should he just appeal to people's sensibilities that way, Eric? Should he make that pitch?
See if he can address their inner Adam Kinzinger, right? If you see the endorsement that Kinzinger put out today
social
media. It was really a strong endorsement of Biden, saying, yeah, I don't agree with a lot of things that Biden does, but democracy itself is at stake. And it was a wonderful patriotic speech. I'm going to have the entire transcript in the Picayune Sentinel on Thursday morning. And, you know, it's the thing that you need to hear as a citizen of this country. If you care about democracy, if you care about the future of this country, you have to realize what a threat Trump is to that. And that's why this 2025 agenda that his team has, which is essentially to turn the presidency into a dictatorship, and I think that, you know, and taking over the courts and what's been going on there. I really think that this is a moment, an existential moment for the American experiment. And he does. I think he should underscore that. Yeah. I don't know how many people care about that, but I think enough to carry the day.
And by the way, Donald Trump said, how can I be expected to win a debate when I'm out here campaigning and the other guy is rehearsing and practicing as though that's cheating? He said, how can you be the leader of the country if you're rehearsing for the debate? I'm out there at rallies. And so he's constantly throwing up these potential reasons why he won't perform well in the debate. The moderators are against him. It's a corrupt network. Joe Biden's been practicing too much. I have this on my scorecard. This is my bingo card. Tell me if I'm going to get my box checked on this. Will the word felon be used?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I think.
Hunter.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Corrupt.
Oh, totally.
Who's going to say it first? Rigged.
Maybe Biden not Congress. Corrupt, but rigged.
Who gets to talk first? Yeah.
I thought it was a weird strategy. So Joe Biden wins the coin flip. and he gets to decide either what side of the screen he wants to appear on, or does he want to get the last word in? And he chose to appear on the right side of the screen. Somebody much smarter than me have counseled him that that was a good idea, because I thought you always wanted the last word, but he gave it to Donald Trump.
Somebody, I thought so too.
Explain that to me, Marge. That's your field.
Well, there must be, in this part, I don't know, there must be statistics about what you see and remember from the right as opposed to the left. But I also know that what you say is correct. Years ago, when I had my first opportunity to be on Chicago Tonight and be interviewed, my old friend Rahm Emanuel suggested, be the last thing they hear, even if it means talking over the credits. So you think the show's done, but the audience is still listening, keep talking, and they will remember you get the last word. So I've always thought that was pretty important. But there is research about, right side, left side, you know, in terms of even ad placements in a newspaper in an old school context.
Right.
So they've clearly weighed it. And it was not a random choice, I'm sure.
I wonder if it's not that they just want Donald Trump to say as much as possible, and they want those last words to come from Trump, because Trump's rhetoric these days is so unhinged. So that if you leave it to Biden to give sort of a conventional wrap up and people leave with this, you know, God bless America, thank you for this debate and all this other stuff, if you get Trump leaving people with this impression that he is like your deranged uncle at the end of the bar after three cocktails, which he often does, that maybe that's the strategy. Maybe
he doesn't drink, but he goes off.
Well, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really care what side of the screen he's on. What they want is the public to, and I think that's why they wanted this debate so early in the process. They want Biden to look fine, and they want Trump to remind people what his administration was like, because there is a bit of amnesia about what the Trump years were like out there. There's some strange nostalgia for those 4 years that some people have.
Kate, will the word rigged appear in the debate on my bingo card?
Oh, as soon as Donald Trump can talk, you know that'll be up there.
Really? Because that's going down grievance road, and maybe he shouldn't do that. But you think he won't resist the word rigged?
No, I would say there might even be, say, like a 20% chance that he could, at the last minute, say, I'm not even going to be in this debate because it's all rigged against me. Few people have thrown that out there. I think there is some small chance of that. He is ahead in the polling, so in a way, it behooves him less to be there. He's just nuts, so anything can happen with him. So I just think you should put that on your bingo card, too.
Rigged will appear on my bingo card.
Have you got Gatorade on your card? Because that's the new Republican talking point is that Biden will be hepped up on Gatorade.
Oh, no. Gatorade is a performance-enhancing drug?
I'm sorry. Not Gatorade. Mountain Dew. Fix that in post.
No, I will not. Mountain Dew. Either way, I'm surprised to hear that.
Trump said he thinks he's going to get a shot in the, not a nice word for bottom.
What drug could they possibly give Trump to control him?
Yes.
Because some people, it might be a tranquilizer, but that would just make him be even worse than he is. So I'm not sure if they even have an option of medicating their candidate.
Rex Hupke has a column in USA Today saying that Trump will probably bow out of the debate because he's a grade A coward.
Wow.
I do think that the Trump team has been raising expectations now for Biden. They spent the last year talking about the fact that he basically drools into a cup, and he's, as some people put it, he's a meat puppet. He doesn't have any thoughts of his own. And suddenly they go, a couple of glasses of Mountain Dew, and he's going to go out on stage and light the world up. Because they realize, I think, they all realize that Biden is not going to be the doddering old man that they've been telling people that he is. He may not hitting on all cylinders anymore, but he is still the president of the United States, and he still knows his stuff. And, like I said, barring a real lapse, people are going to go, wait a minute, this is the guy who they said is barely, is cognitively impaired. I don't think so. I don't think he's going to come off that way. Like I said, he may not come off as as glib and articulate as a younger, fresher politician, but he is not going to look as bad as they've been saying he's going to look. So all of a sudden they've got like, oh, Mountain Dew and cocaine or whatever, or Adderall, whatever it is they're going to give him, so he can present well. So I think they are scared. I think they are scared. I think Trump is scared, and I wouldn't be surprised if he bowed out. I hope he doesn't, but and I don't think he will, but I won't be totally surprised.
I think it's typical strategy, though, isn't it, to lower expectations for yourself and heighten them for your opponent. That is just basic strategy.
But Trump and his ego doesn't really allow him to do that. He can't. He just can't say good things about Biden or any good expectations. But I also want to point out that when you talk about a younger, fresher politician, when Biden himself was younger and fresher, he was still gaffe prone. That's sort of who he is.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Well, Kate doesn't agree with me. I think he should call it out.
Right.
Like, you know me. You know that sometimes I mix up my words or my thoughts or my ideas. I've done that my whole decades in public service. But you also know me at the core as someone who's going to stand up for you. And you can see that my opponent only stands up for himself. I would just keep coming back to those messages. And as Eric said, the future and how different it would be if you turn things over to Trump and Project 2025. I think one problem is that, like, Kate, when you mentioned the entire looking up the full videos that are online, or you think about Project 2025 and looking it up, even if we got a 60% viewership for this debate, which I don't think we're going to, at least not for more than the first 5 minutes, I think people tune in and tune out. But I think doing that extra homework, it's very a limited population that's going to do more than take the quotes they see on social media.
Oh, most people will watch the highlight reel, just like with Saturday Night Live,
yeah,
right?
So right, that's exactly. True. Yeah.
So it's really important that the highlights not be negative.
Guys, I am so done with this Ed Burke story, and yet maybe I'm not done. 8 years ago, Alderman Danny Solis wore a wire for the feds and caught Ed Burke inquiring about some tax business for his firm. And over time, the feds built a case that led this month to a sentence of 2 years in jail and a $2 million fine. Ed Burke was found guilty on 13 counts of corruption. The judge said at sentencing that weighing against the four principal crimes over a two-year span were 50 years of good deeds, as told to her in hundreds of letters from supporters. The judge also didn't like that Alderman Danny Solis got to skate with no prison time in exchange for his cooperation with the investigation. Kate, what did you think of the sentence? 2 years and $2 million in fines, which really aren't going to cost Ed Burke much since he'll be able to use his campaign war chest. But was justice served? Were you happy with that sentence?
It was served as well as it was going to be. I do think 2 years is okay. I think the sentencing guidelines would have said 8 years, apparently. So obviously it is far less, but I do think it is fair, not for someone to skate just because they've gotten away with something until they're elderly, but I do think it is fair once someone gets to be about 80 for the judge to factor in that 2 years for an 80-year-old is a much greater thing than it would be if he was younger. So I don't have a big problem with that. Former Alderman Dick Simpson, who, you know, we call him former Alderman, even though for the past like 50 years, he's former UIC political science professor. But he thought it was fair. And he thought that it did send a message to the other politicians also. I think he's basically right. People made a big deal about the fact that Burke smiled after the sentencing was read. But, you know, what else is someone like Ed Burke going to do? He's not going to break down and cry in the courtroom. His wife cried. You don't think he cried in private at some point in all this time? Of course he has. It's a huge thing just to have gone through this trial. So if you know, the politicians who are not going to be deterred by this would not have been any more deterred if he got 3, 4, or 5 years. That wouldn't have made any difference. Hmm. Oh, and as far as the money is concerned, I find it very interesting that all the politicians who at least were quoted saying, yeah, it was right that he got this time, isn't this corruption horrible? I didn't hear a single one of them saying, you know what we need to do? I'm going to introduce the legislation
You're right.
Makes sure that I and my other colleagues cannot use our campaign money to pay for lawyers and pay for fines for this kind of a corruption case.
Didn't
Nobody has said that.
Eric, what did
you
think?
Well, the odds are against them, right? Are there 42 aldermen who have been convicted since the early 70s? We practically have a full council in or recently having been in jail.
Well, the best line on that was Austin Berg's at the Mincing Rascals podcast at Whiskey Acres, when Austin Berg reminded the audience that the Chicago City Council has a higher crime rate than any neighborhood in the city. And
all
he
right.
said, that shouldn't be a laugh line. It's true.
Yeah, I think we were at Winter's Wine Bar, weren't we? Not Whiskey Acres.
Yes.
I said Winter's Whiskey Acres. It's Winter's Jazz. 2 days later, 3 days later, I did a thing at Whiskey Acres. So I've had a lot of booze lately. It was at Winter's Jazz Club, and Austin had the line of the night.
No, I mean, I feel like 2 years was, given that it's a substantial percentage of the time that he has left on Earth, in all likelihood, it's a pretty stiff sentence for an 80-year-old man. And the fine was something that I thought should have – he's worth $30 million. It should have been $15 million. They should have actually dug into his bank account. I think the judge really messed up on that, because he's just going to take it out of his campaign funds, and it is disgraceful and outrageous that they're able to use their campaign funds for legal defense. I think that that's got to stop. The other thing that kind of bothers me about this is that he gets 3 months to, quote unquote, get his affairs in order before he reports to prison
in September,
which is absurd. Yeah, he has 3 months. He has until September, I think, 20th or something.
18th,
in the middle of September. He's got all summer. The dude was convicted 6 months ago. He was charged 5 years ago. You think maybe he's getting those credit card numbers together and putting some documents in the top drawer of a desk? He's got the whole summer to do that? And what it tells me is that the system does not take this white-collar crime all that seriously. Like, you're being punished. You don't get a chance to get everything in order. You know, get down to the prison. We'll give you a week. I was just outraged by that. I posted this on Facebook. I asked some lawyers to explain it to me, and all they said was, well, this is pretty common in white-collar crime cases. And I know it is common. It's happened with all the politicians who are convicted. But I just think it's outrageous. Like, why do we give such deference to these people? Here's convicted of a crime. Put him in prison.
You know what I don't understand is, why would you want that extra 3 months? I would just be like, all right, let's just do it. Let me be done with this.
If he had pled guilty a long time ago, think of how much closer he would be to getting out by now. I thought about that with Blagojevich. I thought, you're going to go to jail. Go to jail, get it over with. You could be at your daughter's high school graduation.
Well, he didn't even admit his guilt.
Neither of them did.
Neither of them did. It was one of those fake apologies, you know.
Yeah.
If anyone has been harmed by this, that's a shame.
Exactly. Well, Marge, did it bother you that I didn't see the relevance of the fact that Danny Solis didn't go to jail because he was wearing the wire and was cooperating? You give the pass to the small fish to catch the big fish. This sounded like a novelty to the judge. I don't know how I don't care if Danny Solis got free Viagra and the use of Oprah's farm for his daughter's birthday or graduation party. I mean, I don't like the corruption of any of these guys, but I would make that trade. I would say give up Solis for Ed Burke or Mike Madigan, wouldn't you?
Well, I would never be in that situation. Neither would you. So it's a little hard to say what we would do. He's probably a candidate for witness protection now, given how he's turned on some pretty powerful folks here. But, those plea deals are reviewed in court. There's a judge who signs off on them, right? I mean, that's how Hunter Biden lost his because the judge said it wasn't adequate. So I agree with you, John. I have less concern about the deals that was made for Danny Solis. And the person who is really doing the harm is the one who's just been convicted and sentenced, as it should be.
Well, Solis obviously did plenty of harm himself, but it was a little odd in that the judge kind of acted like she didn't understand how this type of thing works, how undercover operations work. The thing that I would say about Solis is, of course, they have to give him something to wear a wire against other people.
Why else would he cooperate?
It's a huge risk.
Right. So fine, make recommendations on, no time in jail. The thing about Solis is that the way it's you know going down right now is he will be eligible for his pension, and he should not be drawing money from the city of Chicago after this. I'm very disappointed in them for not, you know, putting that into the plea deal. It should be enough for him that he gets his freedom. He should not be getting that money.
It was curious to me that the judge said, I have a 2-year time span in these 4 criminal acts, and that's the only thing I can judge. That's the case the prosecution brought. So any inference, like they said, the guy's clearly a seasoned criminal. He didn't just all of a sudden fall out of the sky with these sorts of schemes, this sort of veiled language. That's evidence that he was doing it for years. And the judge said, I can only take into account what the state brought, and that's 2 years, or the feds brought 2 years. And she says, and then I have to weigh against that 50 years of good deeds, as evidenced by all of these letters. So,
why are those letters any more evidence than all the rumors about what Burke's been doing all these years? The fact that she didn't look at those letters and see that the fact that all these powerful Chicago people, like former U.S. attorneys Dan Webb and Scott Turow, people like that, are sending letters talking about what a great guy is, Father Flager. I mean, that's how and why corruption flourishes in this town. It's such a buddy-buddy system. You shouldn't have these high-powered former prosecutors being friends, saying they're friends with Ed Burke. That's just not appropriate. It's not appropriate for them to weigh in like that. And it shouldn't have mitigated her feelings about the crimes that he committed. I thought she would read those and go like, this is kind of crap here.
Well, the prosecution said, they said these letters are evidence of corruption. They don't exonerate him. They remind us how connected he was. And by the way, Scott Turow's letter in defense of Ed Burke saying don't sentence him at all was the weirdest damn thing. Did you read that? He said something along the lines.
I didn't really
he got it in after the deadline, but it was still made public. So I don't know if the judge read it or considered it. But he said something along the lines of, what kind of guy that steeped in the law and Chicago history, Ed Burke, the historian of Chicago, doesn't know the history of corruption and what happens to these people. Why would he hang himself out to dry with sentences like, did we land the tuna, or I don't hear the cash register ringing, or he can go bleep himself? And he concluded, Turow did, that the only way that you would find Burke saying that is if, because he is in such a state of decline. That was the phrase, a state of decline. And I wasn't sure if Turow was talking about the state of decline of city government, that is, hey, that's just the river he's swimming in and he can't see the forest for the trees. There's some mixed metaphors for you. Or was he talking about his mental health, state of decline? But either way, I thought, what a crock.
Keep in mind, Turow is a fiction writer.
Fair enough.
It's very funny. I mean, I'm actually friendly with Scott Turow, and I don't want to break too bad on him, but I was pretty shocked by that letter, and I thought that it was a suggestion that a younger Ed Burke wouldn't have done this and crossed these lines.
Right.
Yeah, I just think that's preposterous, I believe the judge said in the sentencing that she did not take into account all the nice things that were said by the rich and famous and powerful people, that she looked mostly at the letters from people in the neighborhood. But every alderman in this town reaches out to people. That's how they work, is they give you new garbage cans. They show up when there's a tragedy. They say they pray for you and so on. And he was in a position with the money that he had and the power that he had to do more favors for people. But the fact that you were able to do all these favors it doesn't exonerate you when you abuse your power. And that's essentially what this was about, which it was about an abuse of power. And the fact that the idea that he was addled in some way and didn't know that he was crossing the lines, I just think that's nuts.
Even Burke would argue that.
That is so funny that he basically was saying, if he was really on the ball, you never would have caught him.
he'd be better at it.
It's like after 50 years, he got sloppy. But yeah. Also, the judge said, I've never seen anyone go to so many funerals. Isn't that like in their job description? Aldermen always go to funerals. Is she that naive? I was disappointed with a lot of what she said. It did not show the discernment that I had hoped for. That said, I just think he should go to prison. How long he goes to prison for, I don't even really care that much. I agree with you, Eric. What are we waiting for? Let's
go.
Get it done. But I think there's a core discussion to be had about the rampant corruption here in our city, and why does it keep happening? I think partly because the super powerful like Burke and Madigan show the way. So let's see them put away, and let's find out what's going to come from it in terms of reform.
Yeah, and if I can channel my inner Austin Berg, he would say that what we need to do is get rid of aldermanic prerogative, that is really the root of a lot of the corruption that we've seen over the years. All these aldermanic convictions usually involve getting your palm greased so you can get some sort of an initiative through the city council, because the council defers to the individual alderman on all kinds of matters. There was just a decision by the council, by the mayor, having to do with Lincoln Yards, in which Mayor Johnson disregarded aldermanic prerogative and just sort of said, no, we're going to do this against the wishes of the alderman. I wish I could remember the details right now.
Two high rises that are going to go up, not in Lincoln Yards, but almost adjacent to, up on Macy Street, but North Avenue and Halsted area. And given their performance with Lincoln Yards, the alderman was, I think, reasonably skeptical about whether they should give breaks to Sterling Bay to do more buildings. And he at least asked that they be mid-rise and not high-rise, and Johnson overruled him.
Right. Yeah, that's all he was asking for. Bad example, really. A lot of guys do get their palms greased and then get convicted for aldermanic prerogative for things like driveway permits. But I do want my alderman. If something like that was going on near me, I would want my alderman to be able to say to all their colleagues, no, we should not be putting up a mini downtown two blocks away from me. Make it a mid-rise, and that's completely reasonable.
Yeah, no, I was not. I obviously didn't even remember the facts of the case. I just remember that there was a sense that this was an unprecedented abridgment of aldermanic prerogative. And I think that it should be. Yeah, I mean, if someone's put up an awning or an easement or something like that, you don't want the whole city council debating those. They go on, meetings would go on forever. But I do like the idea of, on some of these major projects, so you don't automatically defer to the alderman, that you say, you're talking about a major project. Again, I'm not saying this may have been a really bad example to bring up, but I do think that that's going to be part of reform, is not necessarily just allowing these aldermen to act like mini kings in their wards, and to remove some of that power, because that kind of power tends to be corrupting.
Well, thank you, Austin. And if some candidate would run on a platform saying, I'm going to get rid of aldermanic privilege, they would be mayor for life. Oh, wait, that didn't work so well for Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, I think people, it's like a lot of these things. Yeah, I don't want other aldermen to be able to stop things that are good for the city, but I want mine to be able to do it.
But I want to be able to do it. 5 years ago, the mayor of Portage, Indiana, a guy named James Snyder, was indicted, convicted, and removed from office for taking a $13,000 gift. The gift, the gratuity, if you will, was from a trucking company. And the company gave the cash to the mayor after he steered a $1 million project to the trucking firm. The question is, can something be a bribe if the payment comes after the fact, not before? Then it's just a tip, a gratuity, a thank you for the business, like a gift card or, $13,000.
He asked for $15. He didn't get what he asked for.
I have been following this story, and I thought, who do these mayors think they are, Supreme Court justices? Oh, wait, those very justices who were comfortable with accepting compromising gifts ruled 6-3 today that the law does not prohibit gratuities like this. Snyder maintains that the $13,000 was for consulting work. There was no quid pro quo. The justices didn't address that. They simply said that gratuities after the fact are not prohibited by the Indiana law. And that might make Ed Burke and Mike Madigan happy, too. It did sound, though, like the court said that they could write the law so as to prohibit or put a limit on after-the-fact gratuities. But with a wink and a nod, you can say, all right, I'm not going to give you any thank yous beforehand, Mr. Mayor. But if you know, there'll be a little something something for you come Christmas time, if you know what I mean.
Well, and that kind of wink and a nod, almost it can be unspoken. And in fact, that's at the root of some of these charges in the Madigan case, the charges against former House Speaker Mike Madigan, which is that people knew what Mike Madigan wanted, and everybody knew that if you did what Mike Madigan wanted, that there would be something in it for you. And when you establish that as a norm, and you say there's no, even if everybody knows, you know, that there's a mens rea, an awareness of the crime being committed, it's still going to be okay. Because there is no, as I put it, it's like in the quid pro quo. If the quo comes before the quid, then you're okay, and that's just wrong. I think that it's too easy now under this ruling. It's going to be way too easy for everyone to know. Well, yeah, if you do this, if you give Ed Burke your business, for example, or someone like Ed Burke, a powerful politician, your business, that he's going to reward you with jobs or a zoning variance or whatever it is, or a tax break, whatever it is that you need. And that's just understood. And corruption fighting has been all about, all over these years, trying to get at the root of those kind of deals. And if you say that gratuities are different from bribes, which is essentially what the ruling said, then you've really just opened up the door for a gratuity abuse.
You've told people how to be corrupt in a manner that yeah, the courts right. will accept as legal. And yeah. I just want to say one other thing here, that it is especially galling in the context of the gratuities that certain members of the Supreme Court have taken advantage of. Two members of this court, at least, should probably have recused themselves, because they have taken gifts from people for whom they have ruled in their favor. So if they rule first and then get invited on the yacht, does that clear Clarence Thomas? Apparently he thinks so, and he wants that to be the law of the land.
Okay, I really hate to be put in the position of defending the Supreme Court, because these days...
That's not easy to do.
Oh, my God.
Good luck. Good luck, Kate.
But when I read the ruling... It did become a little more clear to me that they're not saying that gratuities are okay. They're not saying that it's okay to basically reverse the bribe order and just get away with it. The point was that there was already a federal statute that itself was split between if it's a bribe, and this to cover federal officials, if it's a bribe under statute 201B, and if it's a gratuity under 201C. And then Congress passed statute 666, strangely satanic number. I'm shocked that they used it.
I would have skipped that one.
I know. Isn't that weird? But they passed that statute to extend those laws from federal officials onto state and local officials. The way it is written, federal officials would get a much smaller penalty for gratuities than state and local officials. So like under the federal law, it's a 2-year maximum for the gratuities. Under the law for being extended to the state and local officials, it's 10 years. So their point was, really, did Congress mean to give only 2 years to federal officials, but 10 years to state and local officials? So, I mean, when you look at it that way, it kind of, I hate to say it, makes sense. They weren't saying this is a good thing and it's okay. They're saying Congress needs to go back and redo this if this is what they wanted to say.
But they didn't remand it to Congress. They remanded it to the state and local officials to govern themselves.
They did say that, but Congress could still just reword it to do that. I think they made a valid point that both Indiana and Portage have failed to think to pass a law saying that their local officials should not be taking money and doing business with their local contractors. But that's why he was not prosecuted by the state or by Portage, because they have failed to pass those kind of laws themselves, which
is pretty
foolish.
Of course they did. Would you expect the city council led by finance chair Ed Burke to have passed something like that?
I'm talking about Indiana.
No, but it's the same idea. It's local.
The point is it's going to local officials. Look at our state officials, too.
Congress can, Marge. Congress can reword it. I'm not saying I'm happy about this either. But I can see their point.
But if they're throwing it back to the state and local officials, we know well in Chicago how now they're just washing their hands of it. Then nothing's going to happen. Here's Judge Kavanaugh. He said Section 666 makes it a crime for a state and local official to corruptly solicit, accept, or agree to accept anything of value from any person intending to be influenced or rewarded for an official act. See, you could stop right there. I mean, dead to rights. But then he writes, that law prohibits state and local officials from accepting bribes that are promised or given before the official act. The question in this case, in 666, is whether 666 also makes it a crime for state and local officials to accept gratuities, gift cards, lunches, plaques, books, frame photos, or the like, that may be given as a token of appreciation after an official act. And the answer is no. Later, he writes, 666 leaves it to state and local governments to regulate gratuities to state and local officials.
Well, if you read the dissent, you'll see that Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson sort of mocks this idea that this is somehow analogous to giving your garbage collector a bottle of scotch at the end of the year or something. That we pretty much know what we're talking about here, and I don't see a huge difference between a significant gratuity and a bribe. Now, if you're talking about, you know, a sheet cake or an expensive bottle of wine, that's very different. That's very different from this kind of cash payout that this James Snyder took. So I am troubled by this ruling, and I feel like that it is going to open the door to more corruption if somehow they don't. And it should be a federal law. I think this should be this interest in good government is a federal matter.
Sure.
And you can't just say, well, every county, every little jurisdiction can have its own rules about this. That's not a recipe for good government.
Well, and
I totally agree with you. Congress should totally plug that loophole. But I mean, under federal law, they do, for the federal officials, it is separated between briberies and gratuities. I was surprised by that myself. Why would you not?
Well, was it Kavanaugh that wondered, is this a venial sin or is it a mortal sin? And the Solicitor General said something along the lines that it's just a consciousness of wrongdoing. She used the word consciousness. And I thought, you can tell that this is not a sheet cake, Eric. It's $13,000 in cash.
Right. Exactly.
What part of that sounds legal to you?
What the statute says is that they should not be influenced or rewarded for doing their job. And I just don't think you give an elected official whole lot of cash for doing their job. I think about, well, Eric, you know that journalists of reputable publications can't accept gifts. I've had lunch many times as a communications consultant with reporters who won't let me buy them lunch because it's over their $20 limit or whatever it is. When I ran the League of Chicago Theaters and there was a new new critic, theater critic that came on board. We sent a packet of gifts from theaters, which were, you know, mugs and t-shirts, and they sent them back.
Wow.
The Tribune lawyer said he can't accept it because the aggregate was from the League of Chicago Theaters and totaled more than $25. An individual theater could give him a t-shirt. But like those concerned about ethics will set regulations like that. This is not a Supreme Court that is concerned about ethics, and they've made it clear over and over again. What they want is more money in politics. This is another nail on the coffin that was built by Citizens United.
Can we remember before we move on from this, though, that I think it was Amy Coney Barrett who insulted Chicago during the arguments for this case?
I missed it.
Gratuitously. It was, you know, back when they argued it. I know I put it down here for myself somewhere. She said, you know, basically, what about places where this type of behavior is really, you know, common and endemic, like Chicago?
Really?
Like, sorry to single you out, Chicago and Illinois, but what about places like you?
Well,
and I don't think she was wrong with 42 members of the aldermen in jail.
I know, but you don't like to hear outsiders talking about you behind your back.
Especially since you could say the same thing about Newark and New Orleans and other places.
New Orleans, Louisiana.
Hello. It seems like a lot of people in high places do not know the ins and outs of posting things online. Our Supreme Court accidentally released its ruling on an Idaho abortion law today. And as our Austin Burke pointed out, a Chicago City Council revenue survey meant for internal use only was inadvertently made public with an open link for anyone to comment on. In this case, Alderman Will Hall asked what the other alders would think about some various tax hike proposals. There were 16 in all. So let's play along. I'll just give you some, and you tell me if you think this would be a good revenue stream idea for the city. A sales tax on services in the city. You know, if your plumber comes or you hire an accountant, there's no sales tax. There is if you buy a good, but there's not if you purchase a service. How about a sales tax on services? Marge, you like that idea?
I don't like the regressive nature of it and wonder if there's some way to make an adjustment to that so that those who sliding income scale, I don't think how you could verify that. But the problem with that is it seems good on the front end. If I have to call a plumber, I just had one a couple weeks ago, $300 an hour or something. Could I have paid a 3% tax, 5% tax? Sure, I could. But somebody who has a lower income base and trying to, you know, work three jobs to support a family, there are plenty of scenarios where that could be burdensome. So that's my concern about it.
Truth, almost that entire list I had a big thumbs down on.
Well,
I will stick up for the service tax. It's something that's in place in, I think, all but three states. They tax services. They don't tax it in Illinois. And the result is you have higher property taxes, higher income taxes, and so on in Illinois. Marge makes a good point about the regressive nature of it, and clearly, you know, the best kind of taxes to impose are income taxes because those are the least regressive. But service taxes, we've moved into a service economy, and Illinois has not caught up.
Okay, Eric, then what about an income tax surcharge? That was also on the list. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but an income tax surcharge. So it sounds like a tax on income in the city.
We don't have a city income tax, right?
It's a city income tax?
Yeah, I guess that's what it would be.
If the threshold were high enough, yeah. I mean, again, it's one of those things where I agree with Marge, the idea of avoiding regressivity when possible.
Okay, how about this, Kate? A grocery tax.
No, I mean, talk about regressive. That doesn't make any sense at all, especially after Pritzker just repealed a grocery tax.
Yeah. Alcohol and video gaming. I think those are easy. People.
I'm okay with
video gaming because I don't do that.
I know. I don't either. I don't video game. And I do drink alcohol, but I think it's already expensive and maybe I shouldn't drink as much alcohol. So I don't see the downside to that. So I would tax alcohol and video gaming. Eric, are you with me on that one?
I am. I think even though they are regressive taxes, they're also optional.
What about a head tax? A head tax means per employee. Is that the idea? You will tax. Marge, you love that one, don't you?
I'm in favor.
Eric, do you like that one?
We used to have it, and then bring it back.
I think the problem with it is that it may tend to drive businesses out of Chicago.
That's what I'm.
I think that's why they did get rid of it. So
I don't know if they documented that. Exactly.
Maybe they didn't, but do we really need more reasons to drive jobs to the suburbs?
Well, do we need more reasons to drive residents out of the city? The black population, especially from certain far south neighborhoods, have just had a mass exodus because there aren't jobs for them there. There's not investment there. Why do we quake when any business entity or organization says, do that and we're all going to leave, when in fact, the one statistic I know about this is that when a corporation leaves a state, they're generally going to where the CEO lives. Like, look at Ken Griffin, who made such a big deal about, I'm getting out of here, I'm going to Florida. Well, he already lived there. His wife is there. His kids went to school there. And he He already lived there, and that's where he wanted to go. But I just think we need to look at those intimidating claims carefully. And I don't know exactly what all the statistics are, but it is worth knowing them before we throw out an opportunity to raise the money that we need to bring equity to our city.
How about a ticket reseller's amusement tax? I think that means if I'm selling Sky tickets for $500, the city's going to take a bite out of that. Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah, that's a great place to start.
What's interesting about that is, would it affect, like, Ticketmaster resells their own tickets? You can go back into their site and resell them. Is that worded in a way that exempts them but gets StubHub in trouble?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Ticket resellers amusement tax. Eric, how about an increase on the city stickers?
I don't like that. I think it's, again, regressive.
A monthly wireless plan tax. There were 16 of them. I'll just give you one more, two more. A monthly wireless plan tax. So I guess whatever your wireless connection is at your house, there's only 53 surcharges on that now. How about 54? The city's probably already taking a bite.
That's what I thought. I
thought they were too, yeah.
I thought they were.
Sure they are.
Okay.
Whether they want to increase it up.
Might as well.
This is a strange objection to a tax, but I don't see the city's interest in a wireless. I don't see any connection between the city and, any service, like a sales tax. You're ostensibly paying for the roads and the sidewalks and everything else that you need to get to the store and back and so on. But a wireless tax is just like, well, we can take this money from you, so we're going to, essentially. And I guess that's true of a lot of these, right? Which is just like, there's no real reason for this tax. We just think we can do it.
Right. We don't provide any value for that act per se, but it's an exchange that we can just interrupt. We can just get in between you and the provider and say, hey, you have to pay us as well. What about a checked bag tax, that's the way it was written in this internal memo, and we are going to assume that that's a tax on checked bags at Midway and O'Hare. Kate, shall we go ahead and tax that a little bit?
Absolutely. I always carry on, and I encourage everyone else to do so as well.
There you go. So it's
so you're the one
me.
Who fills those overhead bins before I get on.
With my fair share.
Yeah.
But seriously, that is another good example of something that is not especially regressive. If you can afford to be taking the flight and have checked luggage, it should not be that much of an extra problem.
We don't know how the alder persons all responded to that, but I suppose we'll be able to find out in time if any of these things gain any traction. The city council. With that, we're out of time. Eric, good to see you with the free video background on your Zoom page, provided by photographer Mary Schmeek. Kate and Marge, Austin couldn't join us today. Brandon and John will join us another day, too. We're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pod on you next week. All right, groovy kids. That was
good
a lot.
Good conversation. Yeah, that was a lot.
I know. And, we did it in almost an hour because we got started late. Next week, we have a hard out at 3:30. So this was my rehearsal to try and get you guys in and out more quickly.
All right.
So 3:30, okay. Hard out next week because it's the 4th of July and everybody's trying to get out of the building. So if we are done at 3:30 tomorrow, we'll be okay. Okay?
That'll work.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you. See you guys soon.
Thanks, John.
See ya. Toodles.
Bye. See y'all.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.